The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Coming off a one win, one loss weekend for the Calgary Flames, and I liked a lot of what I saw in those two games over Winnipeg as they get set to take on the Jets again tonight here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Not a lot between these two teams over the weekend. There was not a lot of open ice. There was not a lot of free-flowing hockey. It was pretty buttoned down, close to the vest type hockey. Not a lot of scoring chance opportunities or high danger opportunities. And if you're one of those that remains in the glass half full crowd when it comes to this Flames team and this team's opportunity or ability to be a playoff team, well, I'll say this. If they can play like they have in these two games against the Jets the rest of the way, it'll give them a chance to, at the very least, make things interesting. It'll give them a chance to, at the very least, make games going into the end of April and into May still meaningful. And I think knowing where the Flames are and knowing the uphill climb that is in front of them, that's in a lot of ways the only thing you can ask for. And I guess, well, it all depends if you're in that crowd or not, right? Like, if you're in the glass half full crowd, that's the way I could sell it to you. But on the other hand, if you're in the glass half empty or the written the team off crowd, it doesn't really matter a lot. And we talked about this on Friday going into this three-game set. There are going to be some that doesn't matter what they see from the Flames in these three games against the Jets. They've already made up their mind about the team, and that's fine. And there are some who are hoping they make the playoffs and hoping they can go on a run. And there are some who don't believe that's realistic and hope they'll get a higher pick once we get to the draft. That's the scenario that we're in with the Calgary Flames. And that's why this conversation and how you receive this conversation really does come down to if you're a glass half full or a glass half empty view on this team right now.
And realistically, I mean, for the most part, they're in the exact same situation they were on Friday, are they not? I mean, win one, lose one, it's kind of hard to, for me anyways, hard to transition all of a sudden glass half full. Now, that being said, there is the Montreal situation that is floating in there. But still, because they lost on Friday, even if, as you wrote on Flames Nation on the weekend, Pat, even if the Montreal Canadiens go 500 from here on out, Calgary's got to double that. So it's really hard to all of a sudden be changed. I said that going into the weekend, and I remain the same. I mean, they won one, they lost one. Nothing has changed, in my opinion. Yes, they may look 2 points out when you glance at the standings, but the math is a lot harder than that. And really, what the season comes down to is you can't really look at the standings if you're Calgary, and you can't really worry about whether or not Will Mault is glass half full or glass half empty, or Pat Steinberg is raising the optimistic glass. You've got to worry about what's going on inside of your four walls. And so that's what they're probably focused on today, and we'll see what tonight brings. But yeah, win one, lose one, Pat. Nothing has really changed for me over the week.
No, it's the actual situation hasn't changed. It's more what I think is the thing that I was interested in, and the thing that I was impressed with was the actual way they played. And, you know, you're going up against a really good team. That's a team that's fighting for top spot in this division. So I like the way that they played in the two games, and it's not the result so much that I would say, hey, there's something that you can dive into if you want to stay optimistic. It's more the fact that they played the Jets tough on Friday night, and they lost by a goal. They played the Jets tough on Saturday night, and they won by two goals. And yeah, Laurent Brossoit booted around a couple of those goals and helped them out along the way, but they played well, and they played pretty consistently. The big difference between Friday and Saturday was the start. The Flames maybe a little sleepy off the get-go on Friday and were a whole lot more engaged on Saturday, but I didn't really see a whole lot of difference in those two games. And if they can play like that and have their game fairly consistent, it'll at the very least give them a chance to make things interesting. Because you're right, there's no questions asked that the uphill climb doesn't really change when you're talking about one win and one loss. At this point, for me, I realize it's an uphill climb. I realize the chances are slim, and I realize that it's going to take something pretty monumental for them to get in when it's all said and done. But at the very least, you can look at the way they played and say, hey, there were some things to take away from that.
For sure you could. I still didn't think they were overly great on Friday, Pat. I thought they sleptwalked through the first half of that game. And I mean, it score effects and all that coming in. I don't really look at a third period push as all of a sudden they played better. Did they limit Winnipeg? Yeah, sure. But for the most part, it didn't feel like there was much of an offensive pulse for Calgary in the first 35 minutes of that game. And then Saturday, they played a lot better, benefited from some poor goalie play in the third period, but they still focused on their task at hand, almost gave it away with some penalties late. But yeah, that's how I look at the weekend. And maybe I'm a harsh critic on this, Pat, but it's not like I'm sitting here saying they were night and day better. They benefited from a backup goaltender on Saturday. And you know, I thought they played better as a team. And I think the biggest area that they have had trouble with has been defensive team play inside their zone in terms of allowing teams to get in that house, get in that home plate area and have high danger chances. And That's what Daryl Sutter's focused on. And I realize that the entire time Daryl Sutter is being here, it's not an actual stunner if they're, you know, cold offensively for a 20-25 minute period. But again, maybe I'm just overly harsh and confirmation bias is not allowing me to see anything good right now, but it's not like they were world beaters on the weekend.
No, I'm not trying to suggest they were, but I don't think they will be world beaters at any point.
Yeah, 100% fair.
I think they're going to be a team. Logo, hit
is
me
that
with
too harsh from me though, Pat, or are you kind of on the same boat?
Well, Logo, hit me with Sutter 4. This is Daryl Sutter, and it's funny. So I asked him this question today. I said, hey, you know, Saturday night specifically, was that a little bit closer in terms of shots on net, shots towards the net, and limiting chances? Was that a little bit closer to what you need from this group the rest of the season? Here's how the head coach answered that this morning.
Well, in the first game against Winnipeg, the chances were 14-10, and we lost. In the second game, they were 12-10, so that's consistent to me. It's not what the perception is.
So that I thought that was a really interesting response, and that I don't think, other than the start, because you're right, they were a little sleepy, and Sutter said as much on Friday night following the game, where
certainly
he said he
did.
Had a couple of dopey players, and I think he was pointing to some of his top players that needed to be ready to go and a little bit more engaged off the start. But you don't get the feeling that the coaching staff saw a whole lot of difference between the two games. So is it overly harsh from you? I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's overly harsh. I just think that for me, my expectation is they're not going to be playing a lot of offensive world-beating hockey between now and the end of the season. They're going to be playing a lot of tight, low-scoring games, and they're going to have to look a lot like, obviously you're not going to get Laurent Brossoit gifting you a couple of goals, but they're going to look a lot like the last two games, where offense is hard to come by and games are going to be in the mud and games are going to be in the balance in the third period. Those are the type of games the Flames are going to be playing. And the fact that they looked somewhat comfortable in that over the weekend would be why I could say, well, there's at the very least something encouraging if you're looking for building blocks right now. And maybe you're not looking for building blocks,
especially against a very high potent offensive group. If you want to take that into the positives, then yeah, absolutely. I could see that for sure. And I think Daryl's right. I think that was more consistent. Absolutely. But I think that's maybe just the reality of it. And maybe trying to wrap my head around that it's not going to be a ton of edgier seat type hockey from now to the end of the season.
Yes, that much I think that you can take to the bank between now and the end of the regular season. As we welcome you, not to hour two of the big show, but we welcome you to the big show on a Monday afternoon alongside Will Nault and Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Yes, indeed, there have been some programming changes on Sportsnet 960 The Fan for those who have been asking. We now have Rintoul and Sermon, who go from 10 till 2 in both Vancouver and Calgary. It is your Western Canada midday show here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, and also, of course, on our sister station in Vancouver, Sportsnet 650. So Scott Rintoul and Karen Sermon will go from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. every weekday right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Then Will and Logo and I will drive you home from 2 till 6. So a little bit more condensed when it comes to our straight-up regular afternoon block, but 2 till 6, we've still got lots for you. If you're wondering about some of the different things, well, For instance, Peter Labardius, who was a big part of Hockey Central at noon and was the regular on Hockey Central at noon, he now joins us at around 2:30 on your afternoon. So Labardius goes from noon till 2:30. Derek Will still with us on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Elliot Friedman and Adnan Virk and all the regulars that you're used to and all the regular voices that you're used to, all still with us. But the one difference would be 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. for Rintoul and Sermon. And the big show starts at 2 p.m. from this day forward. So we are live today from the Scotiabank Saddledome and from Will's Satellite Studio. And Logo is standing by where everything is coming at you from today, and that is from our iconic studio downtown, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. In terms of tonight's matchup, Calgary and Winnipeg for a third consecutive game. And this is what we are talking about for this game tonight. You can expect Jacob Markstrom versus Connor Hellebuck as your goaltending matchup. You can expect these line combinations a little bit different even than what we saw on Saturday. Elias Lindholm with Matthew Tkachuk on the left and a right shot. Josh Levo on the right is how they skated this morning. Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and Brett Ritchie remain together. Michael Backlund with Sam Bennett on the right. And we saw this switch in the third period on Saturday. Joachim Nordstrom comes up to play with Backlund and Bennett. Milan Lucic moved to play with Derek Ryan. And tonight it'll be Lucic on the left, Ryan in the middle, and Andrew Mangiapane on the right at least to start. On the back, things stay the same. Giordano with Anderson, Hanifin with Tanev, Nesterov with Stone, who will play his second game after not playing an NHL game for about 13 months straight due to a pandemic, so on and so forth. That's what you're looking like, or that's what things are looking like for tonight's game between Calgary and Winnipeg. 8 o'clock face-off, Sportsnet West on television, and of course, we've got it for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan on your radio. Our pregame show starts at 7 o'clock. A couple of texts at 960-960. This reads, guys, when you need to go 16-7 or whatever their goal is to end the season, going 1-1 does not mean nothing's changed. It means they now need to win a higher percentage of their remaining games than they did on Friday. 100%. We'll get into that in just a second. But yes, they were 16-7 going into Wednesday, Will. Then they lost a couple of games, so that meant that they had to go 16-5. And now, if that target is accurate, right now you're looking at 750 hockey, 15-5. That is what the Flames will have to play, again, if they are looking to hit that target. I don't know if it needs to be quite there, but in and around that ballpark, I mean, maybe you could go 14-6 and still make it, but it's not like you can go, you can't go 10-10 and make it. Well, 15-5 is a pretty good target when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and if you go anything less than 15-5, you're probably relying on opponents to help you out. So 15-5 is on your own with minimal help, and that probably puts you right in the ballpark. Anything less than that, that's the more help you need.
If you are looking for the most glass half full, in fact, this thing is just a full glass. If you're looking for a straight up full glass of milk today, this text, since coaching change, Montreal is on pace for 9 wins. Calgary's on pace for 10. I stand by my claim. If Calgary goes 3-2 versus Montreal and 12-8 overall, they will make the playoffs. So there you go, Will. That text says Calgary only needs to go 12-8 down the stretch, and we're way off on 15-5.
That's glass. Absolutely just jammed.
That's glass overflowing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's get in to that conversation about what the Flames need to do to make the playoffs. I wrote about this over the weekend at Flames Nation, and I think there are a few pretty close to non-negotiable points. And you take a look at the 5 games Calgary has left with Montreal. If the Flames are truly going to want to get on the run they need, win the games they need, and get the help they need, specifically the help they need that they can also control, I think it's non-negotiable. You've got 5 games in a span of 12 days against the Montreal Canadiens next month, Will. You need to win 4 of those 5. 8 of 10 possible on the table against Montreal. That is your number one stepping stone. And it might not be enough from there, but at the very least, you go you're already 3-1 against the Habs. So, and I'm not saying this is going to be easy, or you can write this in pen. But if they can go 4-1-0 against Montreal in their five head-to-head matches next month, that at the very least gives them a little bit of life. I think it gives a little bit of a shot in the arm to this playoff race. That to me is kind of the one non-negotiable point. You got to take a good chunk of the remaining games with Montreal on the table.
Yeah, even if you take three, I think you can say goodnight. I think four is the minimal. If you were asking me, this team needs to take all five against Montreal to have that shot.
The situation as it stands right now,
because you're going to stub your toe elsewhere. That's why you need all five of those.
I mean, if you take four, so the remaining schedule in terms of games played looks like this. You've got five versus Montreal, April 14th, April 16th in Montreal. Remember, they moved one of the games. Yesterday we found out that they are moving the April 22nd game to April 23rd. So then you play three in four, April 23rd, 24th, and 26th at home to Montreal. Those are the five remaining. So between April 14th and 26th, 12 days and five games. So you got five left with Montreal, four left with Edmonton, four left with Vancouver, three with Toronto, and then two each against Winnipeg and Ottawa. One of those Winnipeg games is tonight. If again, on the bright side, you've got nine of your final 20 games against the two best teams that you've played against this year. The Flames are 4-2 against Vancouver and 3-1 against Montreal, and those are the two teams they see the most down the stretch. On the other side, they've only won twice against Edmonton. They've definitely had their troubles against Toronto and Ottawa. So as you said, there's going to be some stubbing the toe elsewhere. That's why, okay, let's say four of five against Montreal. Will, you think five. Here's what I absolutely know. You need to take care of business against the only two teams in this division behind you in the standings. And I know they have not done a very good job against Ottawa so far with losses in five of seven. Well, that trend's got to stop. Enough's enough. You need four of a possible 4 points. It does not matter if they come in 27-round shootouts. You need four of 4 points against Ottawa. And in those four games, you probably need 5-6 points of eight against Vancouver. That would be the next step. You got to dominate that five-game remaining schedule against Montreal, and then you've got to take care of business against the only two teams behind you in the division. If you don't do those two things, you're probably talking about kissing this thing goodnight.
Yeah, it's exactly it. And you know what? It's crazy that you're talking about needing to win against Ottawa and how that might not be a guarantee. It's pretty scary when you think about it. And as I texted you the other week when they were playing in Ottawa, imagine talking about sneaking out a point in Ottawa and also talking about the playoffs in the same breath. Yeah, you absolutely need all four of those points. There is zero question about that.
And here is the most important thing that the Calgary Flames need to make the playoffs. They need their best players to drive the bus. We all know the quote that got thrown around on television and radio and social media and online from Saturday going into the game about Johnny Gaudreau needing more energy in his 500th game than his 499th. They need Johnny Gaudreau to have more than one even strength goal in 22 games. They need more than Sean Monahan to have 3 5-on-5 goals all year long. They need more from Mark Giordano. They need more from Matthew Tkachuk. They need more from Michael Backlund and Elias Lindholm. They need more from Rasmus Anderson. And you know what, Will? They need more from Jacob Markstrom. Markstrom's going to be the guy. We know that. But since returning from injury in his 10 starts, he's an .896 goaltender. That's not good enough for the guy that you went out and paid $6 million a season. So you've got your most important players. And give Josh Levo all the credit in the world, my friend. He deserves a ton of credit, and I'm happy for him that he's moving up to the line with Lindholm tonight. And you know, he's been good, and Derek Ryan's been great, and you know, Michael Stone was a really nice story on Saturday. But these aren't the guys that you need to be at their best. You want those guys at their best, but you need the guys that I talked about before, and that's why I always throw a healthy dose of skepticism or reality back into this thing. We're talking about the results and what needs to happen, but we are 36 games into this season. The Flames have been committed to being an aggressively 500 team, and they have not been led for consistent periods of time by their best players. And is there still a chance that could happen? Sure. Does it need to happen? Absolutely. But I don't know how confident you can be that all of a sudden, snap, Will, it is just going to happen, and these guys, the most important guys, are going to take this team on their shoulders and drag them into a postseason spot. That's what needs to happen. Let's cut right to the core of it. But whether you're confident or not, if you're more skeptical than confident, I totally understand why.
Yeah, and I think some of that skepticism could be erased if you get that early season form from Jacob Markstrom, but you can't also just single him out. You need more from everybody, and that includes your offensive stars. I don't really care what the line combinations are. I don't care that Daryl Sutter is your coach and you want to play in the mud. The bottom line is you need more from your top guys. And if you don't get that, even if Markstrom's playing better, I don't like your chances. And yeah, that's why I think for me, and maybe why I was so harsh at the top of the show about how the weekend went, because, okay, that's great that you split with Winnipeg, but the math is now harder and they're still below 500 through 36 games. It's really hard to sit here and say all of a sudden a team for 36 games who's gone 486 in the win percentage is now all of a sudden going to go 750 or 800. That's tough to make that pivot, and that's not a switch that happens overnight. So
yeah,
pardon me for being a little more skeptical on that one.
I don't think you need to be pardoned, my friend. I mean, I wrote that column, and this is what it's going to take. I mean, you go take a look at the two prognosticating spots. Athletics got them at 13%. Sports Club Stats has them at 4.8%.
And the Athletics was higher for a long, long time. That held on for a while above 25-30%.
And I like all of the four teams that they have in are 90% or above. Montreal, Winnipeg, Toronto, and Edmonton, they all have at over 90% to make the playoffs at the Athletics. So, and that's Dom Lecision's model, which goes through all kinds of simulations. And
it's because it's going to have to be quite the pivot, Pat, for one of those teams to be displaced.
Well, it absolutely is. What we've seen through 36, I do think they are making progress under Daryl Sutter. I really do. I think the way that they're playing is better. I think as a team, they're more committed to certain things that I think they need to be committed to. I do think that they have made progress in 10 games. The problem is, I don't know if that progress is going to all of a sudden be rapid enough to, in the final 20 games of a shortened 56-game sprint, be enough to get them in. I think that, you know, that this is a process that is working, or at the very least I think is starting to show some progress, but it's not something that is going to – this ain't light speed, right? So if they can get in, great. And I'll be the first one to say that, hey, didn't see that coming. But to me – this is a process that is building as much to next season and as much to October as it is to building into April and May. Like, that's great, but the bigger picture, the much bigger picture, is the important thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I'm at, too. I've said it multiple times. Like, I don't think this team is ever going to get to a point, or Daryl Sutter is not going to get to a point where he's satisfied or happy with what he's seeing on a night-to-night basis until probably November or December of next season. It's just going to take a little bit of time, and you're talking about the progression made in 10 games. I agree with you, Pat, but the problem is results are the only thing that matters, right?
Yep.
And what are they in those 10 games?
Five and five. And it's not like you were in an advantageous situation when Daryl got here. You were behind the eight ball when Daryl got here. So, yeah, that's the scenario that they're looking at right now. A couple of texts before we wrap up the segment. 960-960. This says you're not going to make hay against the Winnipeg Jets of the world. You're going to make hay against the Vancouvers and the Montreals. A 1-1 split is a victory for the Flames regardless of the standings. So, again, that's a very glass half full look at it. This says, well, hey, if they make the playoffs, at least they won't be limping into them. And then this one says, the guy who says that all they need to do is go 12-8 is glass half full. That's glass spilled on the floor because that guy is sloshed. And finally, glass half full. They only have two more to play against Ottawa. That's right. The toughest matchup on their docket this year. They only have two more against Ottawa this year. Bet you didn't think we would be saying that going into the season.
Can we call that the Francis jinx, maybe, or no? Do you think we're allowed to do that?
I think we are.
I believe before the year, Eric Francis said the free space in the bingo card. And let's just say it's his fault.
Even before they played him for the first few times.
Yeah, let's just say it's his fault. I think that's the way to go.
You know what? He's going to join us at 5 o'clock on Fridays going
Perfect.
Forward. I'll make sure we'll run by him on Friday. To him. Hey, yeah. Franchise, free spot on the bingo card, hey?
If he signs for anything less than 5.5, I'll eat my hat.
What?
Hot sauce, Eric?
What?
Ed Bishop just signed for less than 4. What? Oh, it's still one of my favorite moments of all time on this radio station.
Good drop. The latest Flames roundup is up on our Sportsnet 960 Twitter and Facebook pages right now. Also up on our website, sportsnet.ca/960. Highlights right to your device every Monday and Wednesday. Your Flames roundup is brought to you by Brightside by ATB, a new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. Let's bring Lou into the conversation. He's with us weekdays in the 2 p.m. hour for the rest of the season. The weekend, playoff chances, and there's one guy Lou really liked from Saturday night. All of that coming your way next with Labardius as the big show's underway. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
This month, all four of his goals have been at home, so, you know, with better play can come more opportunity. And tonight, to begin with, he'll have some more opportunity.
Shifting gears to the blue line, Lou, a young man I haven't asked you about, I think, all season long is Yusuf Välimäki. He also got a seat on Saturday. Michael Stone drew in and played really, really well in that spot. Going to get another chance tonight. Maybe a two-part question. First off, have you seen that kind of rookie wall for Yusuf Välimäki? What needs to happen for him to break through that, i.e. how does he get back in the lineup? And B, how impressed were you with Michael Stone on Saturday night?
Which answer, pal, do you want first, or does it matter?
It doesn't really matter.
Okay. I'll start with you, so, all right? So, 22 years of age, has not played a lot of hockey in the last couple of years, have absolutely no worry about him whatsoever. But again, you're trying to win hockey games, and I spoke this way, and I still would, Will, about someone like Oliver Shillington. A lot of where you arrive at is what you need, not out of the individual, but even in the role. So with the third pairing on your team, what you really need is you need 10 to 14 really solid, reliable, quality defensive minutes. That's how I look at that pairing. I really do. And that's first and foremost. Will Yuso be back in sooner rather than later? Yes. Do I think he's still going to be a really, really big piece of the puzzle? Yes. So you do hit a wall, and this is the hardest league in the world, and it can be difficult when, you know, what we love about Yuso is his ability to see the game, read the game. The hardest thing in the National Hockey League as a defenseman is what? Learning how to defend the right way and making the most. The defensive minutes on the third pair, I think, are non-negotiable. So this is a bit of a refresh, no worries. The bigger story is Michael Stone. Everything he has been through, I had an opportunity to watch 3.5 of his games that he played in Stockton against Laval. Daryl Sutter talked today about how important, and what I saw in the games against Laval were the same thing that I saw on Saturday. Simple, hard, effective, stayed within himself, put pucks on net, sealed guys out in front of the net, made quick decisions, didn't do too much, which right now, and has a real veteran understanding of that role and the minutes. And that's why I think he succeeded, And that's why after that performance, I tip my cap. He's put in great work. There is no doubt that his teammates felt really special after the game for a quality guy who has just not stopped working. The work has been excellent, and when given an opportunity, he made the most of it. So he was truly, for me, one of the stars on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Labardius is with us. Peter Labardius joins us now, 2:30 on the Big Show every weekday. And he said to us in the first intermission on Saturday, Lou, you asked him that question about the AHL games, and he kind of said, to be honest with you, I don't know where I would be if I didn't play those games. I would have looked a whole lot worse. So that was I found that interesting when we spoke to him on Saturday after 20 minutes of play as well. Two more before we let you go. On the blue line kick, tell us about what you saw from Rasmus Anderson on Saturday and why more of that is so crucial as we go towards the final 20 games of the season.
Rasmus Anderson this year has had what I would call an up and down season. And I have high, high hopes for Rasmus. I love his competitiveness. When he sees the game, processes the game, he can do it at a very, very high level. And I thought he was at a very high level on Saturday night. And if this team is to get on a run, he and his partner, Mark Giordano, you know, you have got to have a really solid six guys back there consistent on a night-by-night basis. No doubt in my mind that the sky is the limit for this guy. It's been a learning year, started the year with some power play time, but not unlike, Patty, the conversation about Juuso and Rasmus is in a different situation at a different point. It's just, again, playing with more pace, being better some nights with your gaps, being better with your partner, and being at a really, really high level. And he's been there on a lot of nights. If you can have more of those kind of nights, this team just has a way better opportunity. He's one of the key guys for me down the stretch if this team's to get on a run.
The team they play tonight, the Winnipeg Jets, for the third time in a row. Calgary loses 3-2 on Friday. They win 4-2 on Saturday. This Jets team, 2 points back of the number one spot in the North Division. Lou, what's the most impressive thing about the Jets for you this season?
Patty, I'll be quick. We'll have more on it tonight coming up. Join us for Flames warm-up at 7 o'clock. The most impressive thing for me is not just that they're a really good, deep team. They have done something that no team in this division has done. They've only lost two games in regulation once. A testament to maturity and leadership. And we'll expand on that tonight in our pregame show.
Great stuff, Lou. We'll talk tonight at 7. Have a great rest of your afternoon, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to the daily run with you.
Absolutely. Peter Labardius, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, and now every weekday at 2:30 p.m. here on The Big Show.
Flames Insider, Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Lanny McDonald and Jerome Iginla, two of the greatest ever. Those are your headliners on this date in Flames history. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Flames Insider, Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
welcome to the new version of the big show as we start at 2 from here on out. 2 till 6 is when you'll hear the big show each and every day here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, Rintoul and Sermon go from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. from here on out, both in Vancouver and here in Calgary. Your regional midday show goes from 10 till 2, which means Peter Labardius joins us now in the 2 o'clock hours on weekdays here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and now the color voice of the Calgary Flames, Peter Labardius, joins us. You can catch him right around this time each and every weekday. Hello, Lou. How are you?
Hello, fellas. I'm just fine, thank you kindly.
We were just having this conversation before bringing you on. I wanted to bring you into it. We were kind of going into the things that need to happen, almost the non-negotiables of things to happen for the Flames to be a playoff team. We all understand the math isn't good, and we kind of came up with, okay, you got 5 against Montreal. You've got to win 4 of those. You've got 2 left against Ottawa, 4 left against Vancouver. You probably need to make some hay there. And then most importantly, you need to start being driven by your best players. From Jacob Markstrom on out, you need to start getting this bus driven by those players. Those are kind of the non-negotiables we talked about as to what this team is going to have to do in their final 20 games to be a playoff team. What about for you, and I guess anything you'd want to add to that conversation?
Well, Patty, I think from my standpoint, you can look at all the math and you can look at all the projections and you can look at it in a lot of different ways. I think what allows you to get on a good run is the consistency of good play. And that is what this team is still aiming for. That is the part that really at this point in time is non-negotiable. So for me, it really isn't any bigger or need to be looked at more than one night at a time. And until you get to the point where you can put a string of 7, 8, 9, 10 really good games together where you play the game the way you want to play the game, I think everything else really doesn't matter very much. And one of the reasons this team has yet to have a true hot streak or a big run is because they haven't arrived at the consistency of playing the game the way they want to play it for any stretch of time.
So what'd you see this weekend?
What did I see this weekend?
Yeah.
I saw a lot of good things this weekend. I see a team that I think over the span of Darryl being here, I think structurally I've seen some improvement. I see a team that, you know, does not give you very much in terms of chances against. The two differences for me between Friday and Saturday, and, you know, as you asked Darryl today flat out about, you know, maybe what he saw in terms of the difference. And in fact, he went to a place of saying, as far as how the team tracks it, the chances were 14-10 on Friday and 12-10 on Saturday. So, you know, you give a team like Winnipeg 10 scoring chances in a game, I like your chances of just doing that, giving yourself a chance. Now, did they get a couple of freebies on Saturday that they didn't necessarily get on Friday? Yes. So that played a factor. The big difference for me on Saturday was a couple of things. And that was, I thought their group of 6 on defense did a really nice job, not only of defending, but their ability to read the game and to make plays. I thought they did an excellent job of that, and they were able to do that because of excellent support with their group of 5 and their center icemen. If you looked at that game, guys, and I rewatched it from start to finish yesterday in preparation for today, I thought the team that controlled and did a better job getting through the middle of the ice more often than the other team was Calgary. And if you go back and you take a look at when Winnipeg has really made hay against Calgary, and listen, a lot of the games have been very, very close. I mean, you know, it has been how you've managed key moments or special teams or what team got a save at big times and maybe a couple of games which team didn't. But earlier in the year, Calgary was having, a not just against Winnipeg, a really hard time getting to the attack because it was so clogged in the middle. So I thought between their defense, their centermen, they won some more board battles. I like the way their group of six on defense, with the support of their center icemen and getting through the ice through the middle with more speed, allows you to have some rush attack and also gives you an opportunity to spend more offensive zone time because you're creating maybe a couple more odd man situations and are in better shape. That's what I saw in the weekend.
Lou, I'm curious your thoughts because many talking about it today on social media, and I'm sure you guys had conversations at the rink as well. A win Saturday probably doesn't allow that opportunity for Daryl Sutter to maybe reinsert Dylan Dubé. Curious your thoughts on him being healthy scratch on Saturday and not playing tonight. What did you see from him in the last couple of games and maybe what led to that decision from Daryl?
Well, you know, the one takeaway from Daryl, and I think it's been pretty consistent, is I think Daryl really, you know, wants to invest in some of his key young people and really make sure that the details and how they handle each and every situation and the consistency of their game continues to grow. So, well, I would call it, you know, more of a tough love situation. I know for Dylan that the first period high sticking penalty probably didn't go over very well, but you know, the difference is with Daryl, I think really believes, and this is just me reading it and, you know, hope I'm getting it the right way, and at least part of it is, you know, investing in your young people to help them understand what it means to be a really consistent, every day, every night, impactful player. So that, in Dylan's case, is, I believe, why they've gone down that road. I think it became more difficult based on you won a hockey game, you put some people in, you know, Brett Ritchie was reinserted, and whether you really like Brett or not, all anybody can do is play their role, make the most of their minutes, and execute in a pretty good manner with those minutes. And I thought he did a really nice job. I thought another player that did a really nice job on the whole weekend with the minutes that he received and even a bit of a bump in minutes was Joachim Nordstrom. You go back and you watch those two games in particular for Nordstrom, I didn't find a lot of shifts where he didn't play pretty well. But, you know, listen, Will, I completely understand. You know, this is where it becomes really difficult because you want to grow your young people, and that's really, really important. And yet you're in a situation right now, too, where you're trying to stay in a race and win hockey games and build your lineup as much for tonight as anything else. So that's a hard balancing act to find sometimes, and I get the reaction, frankly, on both sides of the ledger. I absolutely do.
Now, sticking with in terms of opportunity, perhaps, he's played way better under Daryl Sutter, it seems, and I think part of that is just getting his feet underneath him from not playing a ton of hockey over the last, really, 12, 13, 14 months. But, Lou, a huge night, potentially, at least on paper, for Josh Leivel. What have you seen from him in the 10 games under Daryl Sutter, and how big is his opportunity for him this evening?
Well, I've really liked his last few games in particular. I think he's played with pace. He's been around the net. You know, he scored a big goal on Friday just with excellent work. And what you talked about, Will, is where are your expectations? So, you know, we had high expectations going in, and not to say that we shouldn't have to a certain extent, because he and Dominic Simone were a couple of pieces that you added in hopes of adding depth. And I think more in Josh's case, you know, to have more consistent offensive play. But I truly believe, you know, in fighting confidence, when you come to a new team and you want it to go well, and maybe it doesn't start the way that you want, confidence is always massive. I don't care whether you're the best player in the league or somebody trying to establish yourself. It always resonates with me. And he was out of the game for a long time with that broken kneecap that he suffered when he was playing arguably his best NHL period in Vancouver last season. So it's taken some time. See his confidence growing. I see his pace growing. He can shoot it. So, yes, it's a night-by-night business. Well, it might, for all we know, be a one period and out situation. But Levo has played his best hockey as a Flame. This month, he has all four of his goals.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames History starts now.
March 29th, this date in Flames history. We got some fun ones coming up in the next number of weeks. For instance, on Wednesday, you're definitely going to be tuned in for this date in Flames history 17 years ago. But that's not until Wednesday. Let's go today, March 29th. And we'll start in 1983 in a 5-3 Flames win over the LA Kings. Lanny McDonald scored his 65th and 66th goals of the season. Flames go on to win 5-3, and they were the final two goals of the season for Lanny, and his 66 goals in one season remain a franchise record that still stands today. He'd finish the year. How about this for like the 1900 Cy Young Award, Will? He had 66 goals and 32 assists. The old 66 and 32 when they used to throw pitchers out and they pitched every night in the 1900s, you'd get a record like that. But 66 goals and 32 assists in one season for Lanny, a career high 98 points. But think about that. Here's an Alberta boy who in his first full season as a member of the Calgary Flames scores 66. And here we are in 2021, and that remains a franchise record today.
And I will go on record in 2021, say he will have that record for forever. I don't think the Flames will have a 66-goal scorer. We barely see 60s anymore. I'll go on record, Pat, to say that record will never be broken in Flames
I will second that. Unless the game changes significantly in our lifetime, I don't see.
Unless Ovechkin's son is drafted by the Flames, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not expecting.
That kid's got an absolute ripper at the age of three, so.
I'm not expecting to see 60 in a Flames uniform or really at any point.
No.
60 is so rare in this day and age, but 66, and Lanny got to that.
Last two guys to do it, Stamkos and Ovechkin.
Yeah, that's right. And it's such a rare thing. I mean, yeah, okay, Brett Hull and Wayne Gretzky in the 90s and the 80s were scoring 70 and 80 and 90 goal years. Different world now. And when you get to 50, it's a massive accomplishment, let alone 60. And Lanny got to 66 on this date in 1983. A couple of Jerome Iginla notes on this date in 1997. He hit the 50-point mark as a rookie. So obviously the first time in his NHL career he'd get there. Flames lose 5-2 to the Canucks. Iginla would finish the season with 51 points, including 21 goals, and would be named to the all-rookie team. Would also finish second in Calder Trophy voting to Brian Berard. And finally, from 1997, when he hit 50 points for the first time, let's skip ahead 20 years later, 2017.
Kopitar, and up the left wing, drops it back. Muzzin a shot, a Backlund stick. It's loose in front. Iginla trying to knock it in, and he does. Jerome Iginla muscles the puck by Brian Elliott. And with a goal in the final minute of this middle stanza, the Kings have taken a 2-1 lead.
And for Jerome Iginla, playing under now Flames head coach Daryl Sutter with the LA Kings, he would pick up a goal and an assist in his final game at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Remember that short-lived run with the LA Kings? Well, he turned back the clock that night with a fight against Eric Engeland, a goal and an assist for another Gordie Howe hat-trick. Flames fell 4-1 to the LA Kings. This was also the night, Will, that Matthew Tkachuk, I guess you would say, faced the music against the Kings. It was the rematch after he delivered that elbow to Drew Doughty's face a little earlier in the month. He fought Braden McNabb in that game, and remember Kyle Clifford and a few other Kings were just barking at him at center, and there was some interesting conversations had right in the middle of the ice that night. Flames would go on to lose, but Matthew Tkachuk would face the music. He fought Braden McNabb less than 5 minutes into the first period.
And I would say that's probably not even the craziest game Tkachuk's played against the LA Kings in his career. He's had a few with tons on the score sheet. So, yeah, I don't know where that one ranks for him, but that was the beginning, I would say, of Tkachuk against the LA Kings.
Those are your headliners. A few birthdays. First of all, we do want to say that on this date in 1959, Brad McCrimmon was born in Saskatchewan, acquired from Philly in August of 1987. McCrimmon would go on to play 231 games in Calgary, 16 goals, 83 points, a key member of the 89 Stanley Cup winning team. Brad tragically passed away when a plane carrying his KHL team, Lokomotiv Yaroslavl, crashed in September of 2011. So on what would be his birthday, we say rest in peace to Brad McCrimmon, and thoughts and prayers to Kelly and the rest of the McCrimmon family on what I know is a painful day, celebrating what would be his birthday. So just wanted to say it would be the birthday of Brad McCrimmon, and celebrating he was born on this date in 1959. I do want to say happy 57th birthday to forward Richard Crom, and happy 37th birthday to former defenseman Adam Party. This date in Flames history. That's right, we don't have a tag today. So that is this date in Flames history as we wrap up hour number one of the big show. Coming up in the second hour, Elliot Friedman a little bit later than normal on a Monday. He's in at 3:30 this afternoon. But up next, Logan Gordon has the biggest stories of the day. Stay tuned for headlines next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, home of the synthetic oil change, starting at just $79.95. Any make, any model. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
So this is usually Elliot Friedman's spot on a Monday. He needed to go later. He's working the game between Edmonton and Toronto tonight, so he's in a production meeting right now. Elliot Friedman joins us at 3:30 this afternoon. A busy Monday in the
big
world
wheel.
Of sports. I know, he really is a big wheel. Production meeting, come on. He's Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now Logan Gordon with the biggest stories of this Monday afternoon. Let's go, Logo.
Who the hell are you?
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Good morning, Logan.
Logan.
All right, so now let's talk about what really struck me about Logan. He's older, he's weaker.
Can't Logan find better work?
I'm an idiot! You're an idiot! You're an idiot!
Happy Can't Monday, Logan gentlemen.
No. I don't know why Wills is in that montage, but
it really does sound like Derek Wills.
Speaking of Derek Wills, guys. Flames game day from the Scotiabank Saddledome.
Hey.
Flames finishing off a three-game set against the Winnipeg Jets, coming off a win on Saturday night. The captain, Mark Giordano, said he likes what his team's been doing lately and thinks it's going to lead to more victories for the club.
Yeah, I thought we had a good game. I thought we did a lot of little things that we wanted to accomplish. And at the end of the day, you come out with the victory. But I feel like we've been doing a lot of good things over this last little stretch, and hopefully now we'll start getting wins out of those games.
Interesting to note ahead of tonight's game, guys, with the last couple of matchups for the Flames, we've seen Daryl Sutter sitting down some players, trying out some new lines, and a bit of that continues tonight. We're not expecting to see Dylan Dubé or Juuso Välimäki. Your lines look like this: Gaudreau with Monahan and Richie. Josh Levo moves up with Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm. Michael Backlund centers Joachim Nordstrom and Sam Bennett, while Derek Ryan is in the middle of Milan Lucic and Andrew Mangiapane. So, Pat, we saw a win on Saturday. Of course, it wasn't perfect, and they might have got some help from Laurent Brossoit, but the coach still looking for that perfect formula when it comes to this Flames lineup.
Yes, and I think still, you know, he's still experimenting, trying to figure out who works best with who, trying to get certain players going. So I think there's and the other thing is, and don't discount this. First of all, I think there's absolutely a feel that, you know, Josh Levo's played pretty well of late, so a cool opportunity for him. But don't discount this either, Will. Daryl Sutter's made mention a couple of times about how, for him, the perfect hockey player in this day and age is a player that doesn't take any penalties. And that's, you know, it's a very high standard, don't get me wrong. But I don't think there's a coincidence that Dylan Dubé takes a bad penalty on Friday night and then sees himself sitting Saturday and again today. And I also don't believe there's a coincidence that Andrew Mangiapane takes a pretty ill-advised penalty on Saturday and sees himself with some different line mates at least to start this game. I know that that is something that this head coach is trying to make sure goes noticed, that when you take a bad penalty, it doesn't escape him. So I think there's a little bit of that that plays into this conversation too.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that we, you know, certainly have tried to talk a little bit here since Daryl has taken over is I don't know how much accountability has been there in the past. And I think Daryl Sutter is maybe in some eyes going over the top to ensure that that's there. But I think that's one of the things he's trying to instill in this group. He's trying to get that through their brains that, you know, not to be necessarily thinking when you're out there, but just knowing that, yeah, if you do something and you make a mistake or you take a bad penalty, and especially in both cases, I know Mangiapane ended up scoring the game winner on Saturday, but in both cases, I believe, certainly on Friday, they scored 7 seconds in a Dubé's penalty, and I believe they scored Saturday as well on Mangiapane's penalty. So you double that up, and Daryl said it a couple of times on the weekend, special teams cost him in certain situations. So he values a lot of things, Pat. One of them is getting the puck in deep when you got a chance, not turning it over on the opposition's blue line. And the second one is bad turnovers. The third is bad penalties. Any of those, and you're not in a good spot with the head coach. Now, that being said, if I were a betting man, I would say by about the 10-minute mark tonight, Andrew Mangiapane will not be on the team's fourth line.
And the one thing that I know about Daryl Sutter and what is most important, all the things that Will just mentioned there, Logo, all fall under one category for me. Details, details, details. The little things matter. And I'm not saying they don't matter under other head coaches, but that is absolutely something that is the difference between 20 minutes and 14 minutes, the difference in some cases between being in the lineup and not being in the lineup. It's all about the details with this head coach. It really is. And if you're not going to be taking care, especially if you're a young player and you're not going to be dialing in on some of these details, he's going to work really hard to try and get those bad habits out of your game. And that's what I think is going on here. So no Dubé, no Valimaki tonight. Mangiapane starts with Ryan and Lucic, and we'll see if the Flames can take 2 of 3 from the Jets and make things a little bit more interesting going into the rest of the week.
Another 8 p.m. start tonight, guys. Flames warm-up from the Envision Custom Renovations Hot Stove Lounge, of course, goes with Pat Steinberg coming up, taking you all the way to Puck Drop with Derek and Lou at 8 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Now, usually we would move on to our next story and headlines, but we'll keep it Flames-related tonight because we wanted to make sure that everyone got their 50-50 tickets tonight to help out for ALS Research and Snowy Strong proceeds. From tonight's REMAX 50-50 draw, the Flames Foundation directing all of that towards Snowy Strong. Of course, Flames assistant GM Chris Snow, over a year since revealing his ALS diagnosis, the money going to be going towards Sunnybrook's Brain Sciences Program in Toronto. That's where Chris underwent some of his clinical trials. They were kind enough to join the morning show earlier today, and his wife Kelsey, who's done some really great work and talked about the struggles that all this has been going through, talked to Boomer and the guys about how important it has been to know where the money is going and to really what the message is that they wanted to get out to people, including tonight.
to say that we know exactly what this money is being used for, and the money that we donated there, I think will allow them to basically double the size of a first stage clinical trial that they're hoping to start. I think they're hoping to start it this year. So that's very exciting. You know, I think one of the things that we wanted to make sure that we were doing is showing people that this isn't an old person's disease, mm-hmm. that this is affecting young families. And that's a really important part of it. You know, everyone says ALS is rare, but really in reality, it's not that rare. It's that people who get it die so fast that there's just not enough people living it with it.
So, Pat, of course, we always like helping out our friends at the Flames Foundation, but tonight with Snowy Strong and the proceeds going towards ALS research, I want to make sure that everybody gets their 50-50 tickets tonight for sure.
100%. CalgaryFlames.com/50-50 is where you go. The jackpot goes until the end of the night. I believe they extend it to 10 o'clock on 8 o'clock game days. So CalgaryFlames.com. 11 o'clock maybe. Yeah, CalgaryFlames.com/50-50 is where you want to go for your 50-50 tickets each and every night. Always goes to such great causes in Southern Alberta and elsewhere, but tonight is Snowy Strong night, so even a little bit more incentive to buy your 50-50 ticket for this evening. They're on sale now.
Moving on to the NHL schedule for the night, gentlemen. One other game in the North Division. It's another edition of McDavid versus Matthews, Oilers and Maple Leafs. Auston Matthews getting the game winner on Saturday night. Of course, it went off of Darnell Nurse's skate and passed Mike Smith, but they'll take it. The Maple Leafs continue to sit atop the North Division standings and will look for another 2 points tonight. Be a different look in goal for the Leafs, though. They'll go with Michael Hutchinson in net. Here's head coach Sheldon Keefe on the decision to get Hutchinson in the net. This is really about managing Jack Campbell's minutes going forward.
We've got to really be smart with how we manage Jack's workload here. The reality is that he hasn't been playing, at 100%, and the games take a toll on him. So the combination of the fact that he's not used to playing multiple games in a row, and the fact that his body hasn't quite cooperated with him the way he'd like to through this season, we've got to be really smart.
So, will all the talk has been in Toronto about that maybe it's Jack Campbell's time, maybe he can take over from Freddie Anderson and give the Maple Leafs some stability in goal going forward, but it's not lost on the head coach, at least, that he's never held on to a starter's workload before, and they're being extra careful with the guy that, as of right now, holds Toronto's fate in goal.
Oh, and they're in the center of the universe. So if you didn't know the Leafs were having goaltending issues, you certainly do now. This is the biggest talking point going into the playoffs, Pat. I don't know whether it's Jack Campbell or Freddie Anderson. Did they add for a third goaltender? Because I don't know what their confidence level is in Michael Hutchinson. But the matter of the fact is, this is a team, much like in Calgary, they have not gotten over the playoff bump. They've had better regular seasons than the Flames have had. Some would argue they're a better team than the Calgary Flames, but you know, this is a team that has not gotten over the hump in the playoffs. And as they inch closer this season, it's going to be all eyes on the most important position. And it's going to continue as we get closer to the trade deadline and, of course, into the postseason as well.
Yeah, and the one other thing I'd add about this matchup tonight, I wonder how the Maple Leafs are starting to get in the head of the Edmonton Oilers. Remember, we're not that far removed from Toronto holding them to, what, 2 goals in 3 games or whatever it was, 1 goal in 3 games. Not that far removed from that. Then on Saturday, Oilers are in great shape. They've got a 3-1 lead after 40 minutes of play. They're playing a really strong game, but then Toronto comes back on them in the third period, scores the 2 goals, and then Matthews wins it in overtime. I'm starting to wonder if the Maple Leafs are living rent-free in the Oilers' head. That's the team they've had the most trouble with. I'm really looking forward to the rematch tonight at 5 o'clock, Logo.
Also, the other big talking point across the NHL tonight, guys, is another 5 p.m. start. It's the Sabres and the Flyers. Buffalo's losing streak now up to 17 games, but the Heat on the other side for the Philadelphia Flyers. Their playoff picture getting worse by the day, and head coach Alain Vigneault announcing today that Carter Hart going to sit out the next 2 games for the team, says he just needs to work harder to find his game again. Brian Elliott, the former Flames goaltender, going to be the go-to guy tonight and probably going forward for this Philly team, Pat. Weird one. Usually we'd be talking about the Sabres and their 17-game losing streak. Instead, we're talking about A, another Flyers goaltending mess, and B, what was eventually or probably still is thought to be the goaltender of the future for the Flyers, now having to sit out a couple of games and not even be dressed.
Well, and I also know, Will, that the way the Flyers have struggled this year, the way they have failed to meet expectations, that's not all on Carter Hart, although he has struggled. That save percentage is below .870, which is hard to stomach. But there's talk about Hart and why he's struggling, and there's also talk about whether or not Alain Vigneault is the right coach in Philadelphia. That conversation has started to pick up a ton of steam in recent weeks. So it's not been a pretty season in Philadelphia. There are a lot of people who were all in on that team being one of the elite in that division, and I was pretty close. I thought they would be a playoff team. I thought they would be one of the better teams there. They have not been. This has been a really frustrating season for the Flyers.
I got to be honest, Pat. I don't understand the Vigneault hate. I really don't. I think he's one of the best coaches in the NHL, and I'm probably giving the Flyers the same goaltending Carter Hart is right now. I mean, I don't care how good your team is. If your goalie can't stop the puck, you're not winning a lot of games. So you can blame the coach all you want, and I'm not saying it's all on Carter Hart, but the numbers of the season, a goals against north of 4, a save percentage below .870, and by the way, his last 10 games, he is 2-6 with a .504 goals against and an .815 save percentage, including his last 3 games with a save percentage. That's right. I hope you're sitting down at .789 in the last 3 games. Like, I'm sorry. I don't care how good your team is. If you're not getting stops, you're going to lose. So if they fire Alain Vigneault, all the power to them. But I think that's the wrong move.
So we'll wait and see if the Flyers can pick up a win with Brian Elliott in goal, and we'll wait to see if the Sabres, who sold off on Eric Staal last week, can get their first win in their last 17 contests. Also on the NHL board tonight, Islanders, Penguins, Ducks, Avs, Kings, Golden Knights, Wild, and Sharks. While we're still in the hockey discussion, Stockton falling 4-3 to the Toronto Marlies in an early start in the AHL. Adam Ruzicka, Colton Beck, and Connor Mackey scoring in the loss for Stockton. Also, the Blue Jays, as we get closer to opening day, Pat, they picked up a big win over the Phillies today, 13-7. They used a 9-run seventh inning to top Philadelphia. Just a couple of days from Blue Jays baseball, we got the opener for you. Woo! On Thursday.
11 a.m. on Thursday, Blue Jays at Yankee Stadium to take on New York. I'm looking forward to it. We'll kick off the big show immediately following the Jays and the Yankees on Thursday. Should be a lot of fun.
And last but not least, well, maybe least, the Toronto Raptors, they're back in action on Sportsnet 1 tonight. They're taking on the lowly Detroit Pistons, Will. The Raptors have lost 2 in a row. They sold off assets, at the trade deadline. They kept Kyle Lowry, but now the playoffs looking like it's going to be a pretty hard reach for this Raptors team.
Yeah, they're playing up the season, it does feel like, for the Toronto Raptors. And I do wonder, I know that, Pat, you were certainly maybe on a more kind of understanding point than I was. Like, I didn't really understand why they held on to Kyle Lowry. I get they didn't maybe get what the asking price or what they were hoping to get, but mm-hmm. And I understand the legacy of Lowry, don't get me wrong, but that's, I feel like, an opportunity missed for this team, and it does feel like just kind of playing out the rest of the year now.
We'll see if they end up re-signing him. If they end up re-signing him to a 1 or 2 year deal,
then
I think it'll
matter.
Make a little bit more sense, but yeah. If they don't, then yeah, you're bang on. Just wanted to tag this. This just came down right now. This is not worthy of our breaking news splitter.
No, hit it. Hit it, Logan.
Nor is this worthy of a ton of conversation, but we do have a trade in the NHL today. We are exactly 2 weeks from the NHL trade deadline. The Ottawa Senators and LA Kings have hooked up on a deal. Defenseman Christian Wallanen, who was just waived by the Senators late last week, goes from Ottawa to LA in exchange for forward Mike Amadio. So Mike Amadio is now a member of the Senators. Christian Wallanen goes to the LA Kings. As I said, I don't think this one deserves a breaking news splitter, but we do have a trade today in the NHL. So
that gave me a flashback to Hudson Fashing, Pat.
Not quite. Like, I didn't stop. I didn't interrupt you and stop headlines. And I think at least those two guys, like 20% of our audience, would know a little bit about. I still couldn't tell you anything about Hudson Fashion. But that one will go down in headlines history.
Nobody might. Everyone listening right now might have no idea what we're talking about. But it's funny for you and I, and that's all that matters.
That really is, because we just do this show for ourselves, Logan.
That's right.
That's really all that matters.
Yeah, stick around for, I guess we got, what, 2.5 more hours of Christian
Inside
Milan
jokes.
And Mike Amadio breakdown here. So we'll.
Hey, let me tell you about Mike Amadio and why he will solve all of Ottawa's power play problems when we come back on
big
the show.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity.
That's enough of that.
Save up to $8,200 on the 2020 QX50 with a cash purchase. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Don't talk over the tag. Don't talk over our friends at Hyatt Infinity logo. Yes, Hyatt Infinity brings you headlines each and every day. Also brings you our game in a minute, which we will hear a little bit later on this hour following a Flames win over the Winnipeg Jets on Saturday night. These two teams meet again tonight. Note the start time. 8 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan will be on the air at 7 o'clock with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Today's show coming at you live from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at Iconic EC. Deadline 2 weeks away, from Taylor Hall to the Florida Panthers searching for a defenseman and a whole lot more. The latest from around the league with the best in the business coming up next on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Lost your keys? Calgary Lock & Safe can rekey or recode your locks. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Hello, Mr. Friedman. Happy Monday to you, my friend. Thanks for fitting us into the schedule today. I know that you've got a busy Monday, and you've got the Leafs and the Oilers coming up in 90 minutes. How are you on this fine Monday?
I'm good, and Pat, thank you for understanding. We just finished the production meeting. As is normal, absolutely nothing of use was accomplished, but you still have to attend them anyway.
See, attendance is compulsory.
It's mandatory.
That's why you're such a great employee, my friend. The trade deadline, 2 weeks from today, and I guess in 14 days from now, the deadline will have already passed at this time. But do you feel like buzz is starting to pick up? We just had a minor trade between LA and Ottawa, but do you feel like the buzz is starting to pick up around the league?
Well, I think the one GM who's really jumped into it with both feet is Kevin Adams in Buffalo. And, like, I think there's, like, the Central Division has kind of mucked everything up right now. Chicago's come back towards the group, and you've got Nashville in the race, and Columbus, though they had an awful weekend, is in the race. You know, St. Louis has been weirdly poor. And, you know, their last 21 games, I looked at their schedule this morning, Pat, they've got 18 games left with Colorado, Minnesota, and Vegas. They play Anaheim twice and Arizona once. Like, they don't get healthy and get scoring, it's a problem. So what I think has happened is that Kevin Adams has said, look, like, we're under no pretense here. You know, everybody can see what our situation is. We're selling. And I think he's getting – I guess when we were kids, we said – the phone was ringing off the hook. Now that his text messages or his phone's blowing up, I guess. And, you know, they made the one move with Stahl. They're open for business. There's a lot going on. And, you know, I think he's just kind of figuring out, you know, what he's going to do. Now, I think he was talking to St. Louis about something. Now, I wondered if it was Hall. I said I wondered if it was Hall because St. Louis is having trouble scoring. I got some pushback on that. But I think they were discussing something, and I'm just not sure. I mean, the problem with Hall is his number's so big, right? So, I had a couple teams tell me they think that it might be a little longer for him just so the number can go down, but we'll see. I mean, I think a lot of it's in Buffalo's hands right now, and we got to wait to see what happens with some of these other teams.
Well, and I believe, as you mentioned, both on Saturday headlines and in today's 31 Thoughts, which is up at sportsnet.ca right now, sounds like Buffalo is looking for a first-round pick for Hall, but it seems like there is some uncertainty as to whether or not there's confidence they'll actually get that. Is that right?
Yeah, and, like, you know, I think, like, I said this last week, you know, that I said this last week, I do a hit in Buffalo every Thursday morning on that show with Andrew Peters and Craig Revay. And, you know, they asked me, do you think they'll get a first round pick for Hall? And I said, Pat, it's going to be hard unless you get a bidding war, because I think that it's a buyer's market that decreases the prices. And even though this draft is really screwed up this year, you know, a couple of teams have made good points to me. They said that, you know, with the cap going nowhere over the next few years, you're going to need guys on ELCs who can play for you. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely going to need it. And they think it's going to make it harder for some of these teams to be willing to give up first rounders. So, like, could they get a first rounder for Hall? Yeah, they could. I just think it's a bigger challenge this time than a lot of us have realized, and especially for a rental. So, you know, I think there's going to be interest in him. I just think you're going to need a lot of interest or a little bit of interest enough to create a battle where someone says, okay, I'll give you the first rounder. Like, Stahl went for a third and a fifth, right? I actually thought that was a pretty good return for Carolina. Now, Buffalo tried to get a second. Nobody was willing to do that. So I think that kind of tells you where the market is.
So we know Hall is on an expiring contract. We know Eichel's situation is kind of up in the air because of his health. So who else are we talking about that might be moving from Buffalo?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I just got a text and I had to look at.
No problem. I just asked, who else might be moving from Buffalo? We've talked about Hall. Stahl's gone. We know Eichel's situation is up in the air. Who else might be on the block there?
Well, I think they're willing to consider just about anything, right? You know, like, I got to think that, you know, Dahlin, like, you know, what? I mean, I guess anybody could be traded, but if I'm Buffalo, I'm being, you know, really careful with that. You know, I think almost everyone's in play. I know they've been asked about Monador. I know they've been asked about Ristolainen. I think one of the more interesting decisions they're going to face there is Reinhardt. You know, Sam Reinhardt, like a lot of teams have told me, he's played really hard this year. And you can tell he really cares. And I think there's certainly a conversation in Buffalo about how, you know, he takes a lot of pride in wearing the uniform, and I think they'd like to keep him for that reason. But at times, he's also looked really shell-shocked, Pat. And I think they're going through a big decision there. A, well, you got to get an offer that makes you want to think about it. But B, like, I think they kind of want him to be part of their team. So, like for me, I really believe that they'll listen on just about anything. I don't know. Like, I think there's guys like Dahlin who are more untouchable than others or about as close as you could get. And then after that, like, who are you looking at and saying, no way? And I think, but the thing is, to me, the question is, what do they want to fix? I think they're looking at goaltending. You know, they do have one really good prospect right now in the American Hockey League, but I think they'd like to see if they could add to that part of their roster. I think they'd like to get good young players and prospects. I mean, it'll be interesting. I just don't know a lot of what they wouldn't consider right now.
Yep, fair enough. Elliot Friedman's with us from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. He joins us every Monday. What are we hearing on the Aaron Ekblad injury in Florida?
Not good. I have really not bothered them today. Like, you know, Pat, I know I'm annoying, okay? There's just some days where you're like, I'm not going to be annoying. And today is one of those days with the Florida Panthers. Like, that really sucked last night. And it was awful. And, it's not going to be short term. And you got to give everybody a day to kind of breathe. And, you know, I think that it's a real shame. Ekblad was having probably his best season. He's tied for the NHL lead among defensemen and goals. I think Hedman likely wins the Norris this year, but Ekblad was very much in the conversation. And that team is flirting with first place in the NHL, and he's, you know, a huge part of that. I think they were looking at D already, and that may obviously is going to continue. But, you know, I don't know how you replace that. You know, the guy was just such a horse. How are you going to find a guy who's going to replace that guy in the short term? I don't know that you can.
You do think that you thought they were already chasing a blue liner, as you just said.
I think they were. I think they were looking at adding to their back end. Because you know what? You look at that division. You know, to win it, you've probably got to go through Tampa, right? And if you don't finish in first place, your first round matchup is Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Carolina can score. They can really score. So you've got to be prepared for a lot of offense there. I'll tell you this too. Like, I don't know if Dallas is going to make it. I think that they're really battered and beaten up, and I think those guys are giving it a hell of an effort. But just because they're so punishing, you wouldn't want to really see them in a playoff series either. I don't know if they'll have any gas left if they make it, but they'll take their pound of flesh off you.
And it does sound like Carolina is interested in making a move when it comes to a goaltender and maybe divesting of one of the three guys they've got. That's also a possibility we could see in the next couple months.
Well, they're definitely looking for a physical right shot D. Like, they asked Vancouver about Hamonic, and he said no. I mean, you guys all in Calgary, you guys know Hamonic's situation.
Yep.
He said no. So they are looking for that. Like, you know, it's funny, like, you know, like in this league, you know, people don't really talk a lot about bruising blue liners anymore, but teams all think they need them in the playoffs. And Carolina is looking for that kind of a player. They have one too many goalies right now. I mean, in the regular season, you kind of need three, but that Nedeljkovic has had a huge year. And he's also one of those group six unrestricted free agents, right? Like, if he doesn't get to a certain number, and I don't have it right in front of me, he's a UFA this year. And I think they feel that they could resign him, but, you know, he's having the kind of season that pushes his numbers up a little bit. So it'll be interesting there. I think Carolina, like, I think they think they can win, right? And if I was them, I would think I can win. So I think they're going to try to do some things to help them out.
With Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet, in your 31 Thoughts column today, from a local perspective, you did mention the name of Derek Ryan, and you said you think that would be a really nice pickup for a team that is going to the postseason. Do you believe that Derek Ryan is available and the Flames have been getting calls on him?
I don't know if I would say that far. You know, like, look, we all know this. Like, I'm not a genius for saying this. The math doesn't look great for Calgary. The one thing I'm looking at, though, is Montreal's schedule. Mm-hmm. Now they're crushed. So they're looking at 25 games in 43 days. That is going to be tough. And I kind of talk about what I meant with Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, Dallas's schedule, they got crushed this year. They had a COVID shutdown, and they had those Texas power failures that knocked them out for another week. You know, that team is beaten up. And they got some guys who are really playing hard. Like, I understand Hintz, like, he can barely even practice if he practices at all, and he still goes out there. And you know, that Robertson kid has played great for them. You know, I just think that Dallas, like, they are hanging on. They are so beaten up. But they're competing, and the schedule has just clobbered them. And, like, the one thing that I think Bergevin has done really well here is he's got a lot of bodies. Like, Michael Frolik, he's an NHL player. He hasn't played a game this year. Hmm. Every night he is, like, Victor Mete, who I think is an NHL player, he doesn't play a ton. So every night Montreal's got NHL bodies out of their lineup. I just think that it's going to be a huge challenge for them. So like the math isn't with you guys. The math is not with the Canucks, but I can see, you know, people saying like, what happens if the Canadians really, you know, wear down here? Do we have a shot? And the other thing too is, you know, just in general with the Flames, you guys don't have a lot of UFAs there that, aside from Ryan, who are big time rentals. So like, I think you guys are listening on just about anything, but I don't think you're actively going around there saying, hey, you know, Derek Ryan, you know, here's what it would cost you. I think people are smart enough to figure it out on their own and call you and say, okay, what are you thinking about here? Problem is, there's a lot of guys like that. There's Glenn Denning. Yeah. There's a lot of free agent centers. But although teams will be looking for them.
Could you see, we know Toronto's goaltending situation's up in the air. Could you see David Rittich getting any interest from around the league at the deadline?
I think there will be some. I definitely think you'll see a situation where teams are going to say, okay, how do we feel about our goalie situation down the stretch? I think this, like Toronto, like it wouldn't surprise me if Toronto's called you guys and said, what are you thinking? But here's what I've heard about the Maple Leafs. Number one, at this point in time, they don't believe Anderson's injury, whatever it is season ending. So that's number one. Number two, what I understand they've told other teams is we don't have a ton of cap room and we're not burning it on a goalie unless we absolutely have to. So the fact they're not running out and saying, I got to get a goalie, says to me that they believe Anderson is coming back. So that's kind of where it stands today. Although what's my regular line right now, Pat? What's true now might not be true in 10 minutes.
Very true. There's no doubt about that. And finally, just before we let you go and let you continue with your busy day, a 5-1 loss. I was going in a different direction. I wanted to ask you about the college drafted players that mm-hmm. could be available and that could end up joining teams. We already saw Cole Caulfield signed in Montreal. Dylan Holloway, you reported on him on Saturday headlines. Definitely some decisions to be made by teams on some high-profile players that are no longer playing in the NCAA after this weekend.
Well, I got to make a call on Holloway soon because he was supposed to find out today the situation with his thumb. He broke his thumb and he played injured. So there's some talk he might not even be able to play this year. So that could affect his decision on whether or not he turns pro and or goes back and plays another year at Wisconsin. You know, the guys that, the big one is Spencer Knight. Now, Spencer Knight is the goalie at Boston College. He was a first-round draft pick of the Panthers 2 years ago. And, you know, there's a big logjam in their crease. There's a $70 million logjam with Bobrovsky. There's Chris Drieger, although he could be a UFA. And they have another really talented prospect, the kid who played for Team Canada at the World Juniors. So, I know there have been rumors that Knight has kind of looked at this and said, you know, is it too logjam for him? Is he going to be blocked by Bobrovsky? And, you know, first of all, I think he's going to, you know, they just lost, so I think he'll take a couple days to think about it. But I think the other thing here is that, you know, Drieger's a UFA, Knight can't become an unrestricted free agent for two more years. Mm-hmm. If you're drafted out of the NCAA, they hold your rights for 4 years. So, you know, that's one thing. The other thing here is that, and this is the thing that Florida's done the best, is that they have shown, Pat, they're not just giving the net to Bobrovsky because he makes the most money. Like, he lost his job, and they have given Drieger a lot of runway this year because he's earned it. So I think at the very least, what Knight can look at is say, okay, if I go there and I play well, I'm going to play at least while he's on his ELC. Now, in 2 or 3 years, we might have a different problem. But the fact is, you can handle the ELC because depending on the bonus structure because it's limited. So if he wants to go pro, I think you can look at it and say Florida's going to clear a path for the kid to play for a few years.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Great stuff, as always. We will talk to you again next week, my friend.
All right, Pat. Have a great week.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Having issues with your automatic doors not working properly? Calgary Lock and Safe can help. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.
All right, the NHL night starts in just over an hour, which means you still have time to set your fantasy roster for the week. Need any tips? Got any dilemmas? We'll try to solve them for you next with our fantasy expert, Nick Alberga. Join us when we come back on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to The Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Just over an hour away from the start of the NHL night and the start of the NHL week. If you have yet to set your fantasy hockey rosters for the week, have no fear. We've got you covered. If you like that last-minute advice and you like to wait until the very last minute, well, let's welcome in our Sportsnet fantasy analyst, Nick Alberga, who joins us every Monday at that time. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Pat, how are you? I'm completely buying on Johnny Gaudreau. I love that quote from Sutter the other day.
You think it's going to wake him up down the stretch?
Well, I just laugh because I think, especially in this era in 2021, God forbid somebody calls out their players now. It's like the end of the world. And last time I checked, it worked because Gaudreau was outstanding on Saturday, right?
Yeah, he was really good. And Daryl Sutter said was his best game in the 10 games that he's been here. And we'll see if he can keep that going. They need him to keep that going if they want to have a shot at making the playoffs. But we'll see if he can. That quote certainly made its rounds on Saturday. There's no doubt about that. Well, let's jump right in on your fantasy hockey rosters. If you're an Aaron Ekblad owner, it doesn't sound like you're going to be getting good news. That was a scary injury, and one of your most productive defensemen going to be coming out. So if you are an Aaron Ekblad owner, tell us about potential replacements.
Yeah, that was so gruesome, and automatically when it happened, I thought back to last year with Dougie Hamilton, right, in Carolina. Had a really, really tough injury as well, ended his season effectively, and he was on a Norris-type track as well. And I thought, for the most part, Ekblad was. But from a fantasy perspective, you just have to move on. And I think internally, you look at a guy like Mackenzie Weegar, already 50% owned or plus. Important note there, he could see an elevation in power play time. Only one of 19 points this season have come on the power play. He has 17 even strength points, but I think he gets a bigger role now with Ekblad on the shelf, so maybe you trade for him. And external options, Ryan Suter, Minnesota. Ty Smith has been hot as of late for New Jersey. As you know, with Noah Hanifin running the power play there in Calgary from time to time, especially here under Daryl Sutter, I think you look at him. Justin Schultz had a nice quiet season as well for Washington. And Matt Grzelcyk, if you can trade for him, that's a good addition as well.
So there are your injury replacements for Aaron Ekblad. Sounds like it's going to be a long-term injury for him. And you're right, the Dougie Hamilton comparisons, that's a good one. And too bad for the Florida Panthers because he was having a heck of a year. Well, as you are looking down the stretch and maybe looking to maximize or go out and search, tell us about the rest of the season for the New York Rangers and some potential options there.
Well, I can tell you if they played Philadelphia rest of the season, they'd win the Stanley Cup, but that is not the case. I think it's interesting to note, too, with the Rangers, I don't know how bullish you were on this team going into this season. I was probably lukewarm because I think they were no longer the hunter and they were the hunted, right? And when you play and you change that role, I think there's more pressure to succeed. And we saw that in the first half, namely Mika Zibanejad, who really, really struggled. Now, I think rest of the season, the Rangers will start winning some games. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but they've been playing much, much better as of late. You know, it goes without saying Panarin's been great. So has Mika Zibanejad. But there's three targets I'm looking at for the rest of the season. Igor Shesterkin, number one, the rookie netminder. I think he is the real deal. He's outstanding. Back on the ice and back in between the pipes, and I think you have to go after him right now. Another one is Adam Fox. He talked about Carolina. He ends up now, of course, with the New York Rangers and has really blossomed into a puck-moving, strong point-producing fantasy defenseman this season, running that power play. I think it's a no-brainer to trade for him. And ditto for Ryan Strome. And the reason why I brought up these three names specifically, especially Fox and Strome, I don't think you're going to have to pay an arm and a leg to get these guys on the fantasy trade market. And again, it's all about extracting value. You don't want to deal with, too much in terms of your big boys, on your roster to compensate and get these guys. So I think there's some good value to be found here.
You've got a little bit of a dilemma with Patrick Laine in Columbus, hey?
Well, I think we all have a dilemma with Patrick Laine, considering the clip or lack thereof he's firing at with Columbus. It's just more so where we drafted this guy, you know, top 100 for sure in our fantasy drafts, maybe even top 60. It started with Winnipeg way back when. I'm sure Flames fans can remember the hot start Patrick Laine had. Then he got hurt, and it just wasn't the same. He got traded after that, and now you move forward to now. One goal in the last 16 games for Patrick Laine, and with playoff time just around the corner in fantasy hockey, I think you run the real dilemma. Do I hang on to this guy, or do I just cut bait? Because I know I preach patience throughout the fantasy season, but, Pat, we're getting to a point in time where you have to sort of be ruthless and make some tough decisions with your roster. And I would say leading the charge, if you own Patrick Laine, you have to make a decision in the next couple of weeks for sure.
He's Nick Alberga. He's our Sportsnet Fantasy Hockey Analyst. Joins us every Monday to help set your lineup, and you've still got about an hour to do that before puck drops start to go this evening. If you're running into injuries on the wing, and that's an area that you've been struggling with in recent times, you've got some injury replacements there as well.
Yeah, there's a plethora of names, as you mentioned, that are hurt right now. Hornqvist, Toffoli, and Kapanen, among others. And I want to shed some light on a rookie not really getting much play, at least here in Canada. But he's in Dallas. And it's funny because his brother was getting all the bright lights, his brother Nick Robertson with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Who would have expected it was Jason Robertson having the better rookie season? But that's what we're seeing here in Dallas. 6 goals, 21 points in 27 games. He's been very, very valuable and very underutilized so far in fantasy leagues. So I'd pick him up for sure. Another option is Ilya Tolvanen, first-round pick from a couple years ago for Nashville. He's really starting to hum. A 5-game point streak, 2 goals, 5 assists, 7 points, 3 power play points, 1 game-winning goal. Elsewhere, I'd look at guys like Oliver Wahlstrom, especially if you need goals with the Islanders there. Jared McCann in the top 6. Jason Zucker back in the Pittsburgh lineup tonight. Jonas Donskoy has been hot as of late for Colorado. And 2 other names, Jesper Bratt and Josh Bailey, also the Islanders.
Okay. And we have a trade today. I don't know how much Mike Amadio and Christian Willanen are going to factor into Nick Alberga's fantasy advice. I saw you put it on Twitter just before coming on Blockbuster. Not so much. But we did have a significant one just before the weekend. Eric Staal going from Buffalo to Montreal for a couple of picks, and he'll join the Habs in just a few days. Tell us about Eric Staal's fantasy value now that he's with Montreal.
Yeah, firstly, congrats to Michael Amadio. Not only are you going from L.A. to Canada, but you got a quarantine for 7 days. That stinks. Eric Staal, talk about quarantine. I think he'd gladly take it, going from Buffalo to Montreal, Pat. And I could see some rejuvenation with this fantasy file. Going into this season, I was actually quite bullish on Eric Staal. Like, I like the fit. I think we're all wrong on Buffalo, Taylor Hall. Like, there was reason for optimism, we'll say, from a fantasy point of view for Buffalo. It just didn't work there. So he goes to Montreal. You know, I'd correlate it, and I think he's got more game than what Ilya Kovalchuk had left last year. But Kovalchuk went to Montreal. He started lighting the world on fire. I could easily see that with Eric Staal. I think, you know, the one thing of many we've figured out, Mark Bergevin, the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, more times than not, he wins his trades. And sometimes it's guys you don't think to start playing well, and they play well. So I could easily see Eric Staal, number one, be in that top 6, and number 2, produce in that top 6. So I wouldn't jump the gun. I think for now it's just to monitor that situation closely, especially as he comes back from the quarantine in a week time. I know it's fair to add that he is 36, but I wouldn't doubt for a second there'll be some underlying value going forward here in Eric Staal with Montreal.
Very interesting. And finally, Nick, tell us about the week ahead. Where can we exploit some favorable weeks around the NHL?
Yep, so 55 games in total this week, Pat. There are 17 teams with 4-game slates. Again, you can go over to sportsnet.ca. My 20 fantasy thoughts, I've laid them all out. I'll spare you the time right now. But 3 teams specifically I'm looking at this week. Colorado, take a look at Andrei Burakovsky, Jonas Donskoy on waivers. Brandon Saad's another guy. The Toronto Maple Leafs, Alex Galchenyuk has 3 points in 4 games. He continues to play with John Tavares and William Nylander. I think I would take a look at Joe Thornton, who even strength continues to play with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. And the Winnipeg Jets, who Calgary Flames fans will see tonight. Paul Stastny still in that top line. And we all know Andrew Kopp has been on fire. So there's a lot of value to be found. And The one team I would stay away from in terms of additional ads is the St. Louis Blues. They have just two games this week, Pat.
And not playing so well themselves either. good stuff, Nick. Great as always to catch up with you. Good luck on your fantasy week ahead, and we will talk to you again next Monday. Thank you, pal.
Sounds good. Have fun tonight.
Nick Alberga from Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.ca, our fantasy analyst. He joins us every Monday on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Make it a great night. Choose anything from pizza and wings to pasta and seafood or steaks and ribs. Order now through DoorDash or dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. The Flames enter their final 20 games starting tonight, and they're in striking distance of a playoff spot. Kind of. That's how we're kicking off the Daily Flames Roundtable when we're back in 3 minutes on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Their certified pre-owned spring sales event is on, with special incentives on 2017 to 2020 vehicles. Visit MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca.
20 games remaining starting tonight here at the Scotiabank Saddledome for Calgary and the Winnipeg Jets. This will be game number 37 and officially starts the final 20-game stretch drive for the Calgary Flames. Welcome back as we are underway in your 4 o'clock hour this afternoon. It's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. So right now, the Athletic has Calgary at 13% to make the playoffs. Sports Club Stats has them at 4.8% to make the playoffs. I don't need a percentage. I don't even need, like, there's no specific criteria when I ask this question, gentlemen. But with 20 games to go, where are you on Calgary's playoff chances?
Well, I'm glass half full guy, even though I'm not glass half full guy when it comes to the Flames' playoff chances right now. But I am an optimist by nature. And I would probably put my percentage a little bit higher than, what was the highest one there? 13 something percent?
13%, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be a little higher than that. I might be around 20% right now. And only because of two things. Number one, the Canadians have 5 games in hand, but we don't know how they're going to play or how many points they're going to pick up with those 5 games in hand. So until they do something with them, then I think it's way too soon to count the Flames out completely. And number two, Calgary plays Montreal 5 times between now and the end of the regular season. So I think in order for the Flames to have a realistic shot to make things interesting, number one, the Canadians probably can't do much with those 5 games they've got in hand. And number two, the Flames are going to have to win probably 4 of those 5 head-to-head matchups versus the Habs. But ultimately, it kind of comes back to the Flames for me, fellas, because they have been, as we've talked about ad nauseum, consistently inconsistent this season. So they've been that for 36 games. They're going to have to be a lot better than that in the final 20 for us to be going down the stretch and even talking about a third straight trip to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, I think for me, the reason why this is actually a conversation, Pat, is the two things Derek mentioned. I think the COVID pause has thrown a wrench into Montreal's finish. And the second part of that is that these two teams play each other 5 more times. Now, that being said, as Derek said, you know, they have to win a minimum of 4 of those head-to-heads. Otherwise, you can put it right back in the no-chance motel. As I said in the opening segment today, it's hard to be glass half full when we were all on this program as glass half empty guys on Friday, and the math got harder for them over the weekend by going 1-1. So I'm still in the glass half full. I'm certainly not at 20% because as we talked about earlier too, I mean, yes, you can tell me all you want, they've made progress under Daryl Sutter, and I will grant you that. I would agree with that. I think they've made tremendous progress under Daryl Sutter. But the problem is, you're talking to me about progress, but in those 10 games, what's the record? And all that matters is results. And last time I checked, they're 5-5 in those 10 games. And 500 hockey from now to the end of the season is not going to get it done. So I just have a really hard time believing this team's going to go to a spot where they go on that hot of a run. But if they get some outside help, we've got a different conversation. And the 5 head-to-head matchups gives them a little bit of life. But they've got to, you know, worry about their own business and can't focus on those 5 head-to-head matchups. Otherwise, they'll get burned faster than they know what to do with themselves. So they're in a really tough spot. There's no question about it. And it's going to take one heck of a turnaround. But yeah, I think it'd be foolish to say they've got no shot, because realistically, it still exists. It's up to you to interpret how much of a chance they've really got.
There's kind of two non-negotiables for me, guys, when it comes to the schedule. Number one is what you've both just talked about. You've got to take probably four or five at least in those five games in 12 days against Montreal next month. Between April 14th and April 26th, they play the Habs five times. Like, that will make or break their season. Potentially make and definitely could break, will break their season. That's it. We'll know whether or not the final few weeks of the season mean anything coming out of those games. If they do not make hay against Montreal, we'll know. But if they do, say they do go 4-1 or maybe 3-1-1 or something like that, if they get 7-8 points in those 10 possible against Montreal, the other two non-negotiables for me, or I guess I roll them into one, no more losses to Ottawa. I don't care if you are going to 20 shootout rounds. You need 4 of 4 possible points against Ottawa. Enough's enough there. And you've probably got to take a good chunk of points in your remaining games against Vancouver, of which you have 4. Those are the only two teams behind Calgary in the standings. And if they can't make hay against them, they don't belong in the playoffs to begin with. So those are the two non-negotiables for me, guys. You gotta take care of business against Montreal, and then you've got to make hay against the only two teams behind you.
Let's play a little game of what if here. Okay, so what if the Flames beat the Jets again tonight, which is going to be a tall task. I think Winnipeg has lost back-to-back games in regulation time once this season, which, you know, we've talked about how consistently inconsistent the Flames have been. On the flip side of that, the Jets have been incredibly consistent so far this season. But let's just play this what-if game. Let's say the Flames beat the Jets tonight. With those 2 points, they would move into a tie for the fourth and final playoff spot in the Scotia North Division. Now, the Canadiens would have 6 games in hand. What if the Canadiens went 500 in those 6 games? So picked up 6 points. So let's say that going into their final 5 head-to-head meetings, the Flames are 6 points behind the Canadiens. If you win 4 of the 5, you pick up 8 points and they pick up 2, and that 6-point gap is gone. So the math works, but the Flames are going to have to play a lot more consistently in their final 20 games than they did in their first 36 games this season. They're going to have to get some help on the Envision Custom Renovations out of town scoreboard. And as you guys have both talked about, they're going to have to take care of business head to head versus the Habs, because ultimately it doesn't matter what they do before or after then. If they don't win at least 3 and probably 4 and maybe 5 of those head-to-head matchups, I don't like their chances.
Yeah. Well, we've got a little ways to go before we get to those 5 head-to-head matchups. April 14th is the first one, 2 on the road, 3 at home. If you did not see yesterday, one of the games was scheduled for April 22nd. They moved it to April 23rd as the Habs schedule got thrown into a blender after missing last week with COVID protocol. He's Derek Wills. He's Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is your daily Calgary Flames roundtable. A win and a loss over the weekend. Your takeaways from those 2 games against the Jets, gentlemen?
Well, when you look at shots and shot attempts, not a lot to choose between the 2 teams in either of the games. But for me, those 2 games were night and day. One thing the Flames have had trouble doing this season is starting on time, and probably goes beyond just this season. But when you look at their record in games where they score first and compare that to games where their opponent scores first, not even close. I mean, the Flames are 12-3-2 in 17 games when scoring first, 4-14-1 in 19 games when surrendering the first goal. So they scored first on Saturday. Didn't do that on Friday. When the Flames can get to 3, that's the magic number that Daryl Sutter's talked about, that we've talked about. When they can get to 3 goals, they have a great chance to win games. Didn't get there on Friday. Scored twice in a 3-2 loss. Got there on Saturday. Scored 4 times in a 4-2 win. The Flames are 14-2-2 in the 18 games they've scored 3 or more goals in. 2-15-1 in the 18 games where they've scored 2 or fewer goals. So 2 check marks there. And then the other one for me, guys, special teams. The Flames lost the special teams battle on Friday night. They won the special teams battle on Saturday night. So there's another check mark. So I know that, you know, when you look at the shots and the shot attempts and the scoring chances for and against, Daryl Sutter talked about it earlier today. Not a lot to choose between Friday's game and Saturday's game. But for me, those two games were night and day. Here's one more thing I'm going to add. Just from an entertainment perspective, don't you think Friday's game was hard to watch, especially the first two periods? I think they were better in the third. But Saturday's game, I thought, was pretty exciting from start to finish. So give me more of those games and fewer of the ones that we saw on Friday.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. I think the biggest takeaway for me, we talked about it, Pat, just trying to find that consistent effort. Daryl referenced that when you look at the two games, what you talked about, Derek, in terms of the scoring chances and not a lot to pick from the two. I'd say the biggest improvement for me from Friday to Saturday, because I'll be perfectly blunt and honest for you guys, I thought they were terrible to begin the game on Friday. I thought they found their game late, and it ended up being too little too late. But even the head coach talked about players just weren't ready to start the game for whatever reason. I don't know what it is with this team, but it's one every 3, 4, 5 games, and this team just forgets the game starts at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, whatever it is. But then they go, oh, there's a hockey game going on. I guess we better play. And then they played, and they almost came away with a point when it's all said and done. But, you know, if they didn't start the way they did when we were talking about a different weekend. So credit to them. They put a much better game, and they were ready to go from the start on Saturday. And, yeah, far too often this season this team has been chasing, and that's when they get, you know, playing their worst, I think. And it's harder to say to your structure when you're chasing a game. But when you're protecting it, I think you can play the way Daryl wants you to play, and you're going to put yourself in a spot to win more often than not. But again, for whatever reason, Pat, I can never put my finger on it. But yeah, the last 6, 7, 8 years while this core has been here, it's pretty much like clockwork. Every 4 or 5 games, they're going to forget the game has started, and then they're going to try to get it going by the middle of the second period. That's what I saw on Friday.
I actually, like, I know that they were a little sleepy off the start, or as the head coach said on Friday night, a little dopey off the start. And yeah, definitely, when bad penalty, and then 7 seconds into that penalty, 1-0. And
just knowing, mentally weren't ready.
And knowing this team has trouble playing from behind and knowing how often they've played from behind, yeah, it kind of set them up for a loss. And it was 2-0 early in the second period. But for a lot of the details of Calgary's game, especially in the back half of Friday and certainly for most of Saturday, I liked it. I thought they were pretty good defensively. Didn't allow a whole lot in both those games. I mean, the Friday game was 2 power play goals, just the 1 5-on-5 goal. So I thought Calgary's details were pretty solid over the weekend. And that is the most important part of what the head coach is looking for here. He is a details guy, and it's about all of the little things. I'm not saying other coaches aren't, but that's the thing that this guy is hammering on and driving home, I believe. And so I thought that part of their game was really solid. So if they can do that, if they can play the way they did for a good chunk of Friday and for pretty much all of Saturday, if they can do that on a regular basis, at the very least, they'll give themselves a chance to make things interesting down the stretch.
You know what, guys? Friday was hard to watch for me until about, I'd say, the 16 or 17 minute mark of the second period. It just felt like they were on their heels the whole night. And yeah, they were good defensively, but offensively, they had such a tough time generating anything in the first, I would say, 36 or 37 minutes of that game. And then I thought they were good in the final 3 or 4 minutes of the second period, and then in the third period. And we did see a push from them. And it's kind of like they picked up where they left off in Saturday's rematch, because I thought they were on their toes for most of the night, and they put the Jets on their heels. And the Flames are a team that's had a tough time scoring goals this season. So again, I circle back to the stats when they score first and when they can get to 3. They're just way better playing as front runners than they are trying to come from behind in hockey games, because they have a hard time scoring goals. So if they can get the first goal or two, then they're going to try to check you to death and smother you. But if you get the first goal or two, then you're probably going to try to do that to the Flames. So being ready to go when the puck drops tonight is going to be a big key in this game against the Jets. And feels like another must-win game, doesn't it?
They're going to feel a lot of those are going to feel like must-win games down the stretch. In fact, I would suggest until they're out, I would suggest they're all going to feel that way for the final 20 for the Calgary Flames. He's Derek. He's Will. I'm Pat. One more on our Daily Flames Roundtable today and some new-look lines again tonight, at least to start. Josh Levo, kind of the most significant one, being moved up with Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm. What do you make of that decision and just overall the four line combinations we'll see to start tonight's game?
Well, I'm happy for Josh Levo because he got off to a really tough start this season, was goalless in 18 games to start his tenure with the Flames. But since then, he scored 4 goals in 12 games, and I think he's been playing some pretty good hockey. So I'm happy that he got a big goal for the team and a 4-2 victory over the Jets on Saturday and is going to be given an opportunity to play on the top line with Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk at least to start tonight's game. But what does that mean? Why is he in that spot that Andrew Mangiapane was in? Well, Mangiapane did score the game-winning goal on Saturday night, so that's good. But what he did was take a bad penalty. And you know Daryl Sutter hates it when players take penalties, especially bad ones. And the Flames' new bench boss has made it very clear in his first 10 games that if you are a young player who he probably considers to be an important part of the core moving forward, and you're not playing the way he wants you to play, he's going to send you a message. And I think what's happening here is he's sending Andrew Mangiapane a message. Now, I don't think taking Mangiapane out would be a good idea, because for a team that, again, has been consistently inconsistent, I think he's been one of their more consistent players, certainly when it comes to effort. He gives you what he's got every single night. But I think that this is a message from Sutter to Mangiapane. You can't take penalties like that. You know, he took that roughing penalty on Mark Scheifele in the second period. Didn't cost the Flames a power play goal, but I think this is a message being sent, just like the message that he sent to both Dylan Dubé and Yusuf Alamaki by making them healthy scratches on Saturday night when they made mistakes in Friday's game. And I don't know, I think if the Flames had lost Saturday, those guys would probably be back in against the Jets tonight, but they didn't. They won. So those guys, it looks like they're going to remain out. So I think Sutter is, you know, he's figuring out who are the players I want to move forward with and what do I need these guys to do to grow their individual games and to help our team game. So, you know, people might think, well, what's he doing scratching some of his top young players like Dubé and Valimaki and demoting Mangiapane? Well, I think he's investing in these guys. And if they play the way he wants them to play, I think he's going to give them more opportunities moving forward. But they're young, they're impressionable, and you can do these types of things to young and impressionable players. It's, I think, a bit harder to do with some veteran guys. And I know there are some fans out there that would like to see him maybe take some ice time away or healthy scratch some of the veteran guys. But I just think it's way easier to do with the young guys, and that's what we're seeing under Sutter.
Yeah, it's a teaching moment. And I said this to you last hour, Pat. I don't know. I'd be pretty surprised, to be quite honest, if we talk about Andrew Mangiapane on the fourth line all night long. I think we've seen this before from Daryl, whether it be the Iginla-Conroy years in Calgary or even in sometimes in L.A. He will bench a star player, whether it's a bad penalty, a turnover at the opposition blue line or the offensive blue line, I should say. Those are things that Daryl doesn't like, or out of position in your defensive zone. If you're doing some of those things, he's going to sit you down and have that conversation. It might result in a healthy scratch. It might result in some benching. It might result in starting the game on the fourth line. But Derek's right. He's been their most consistent forward. He didn't want to take him out of the lineup, but he also wanted to tell him that, hey, what you did on Saturday was not acceptable. That's not what we're trying to do here. I know you scored the game winner. You helped us get the 2 points. So I'm not going to take you out of the lineup, but I also can't reward you and keep you on the top line, at least to begin the night. So that's how I read it. And certainly in the Dylan Dubé front, I think it's the same thing. But because the team won on Saturday, he's not getting a chance to get back in there tonight. That's how I read it. And like I say, I don't think we're talking about an all-night thing on the fourth line for Mangiapane. And Nordstrom's played well, so Sutter's given him a little bump to start. But I do think we're going to see things settle out as the night goes along.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just quickly echo guys, because I'm with you. The penalty thing is absolutely the thing that I went to. I think Daryl's said it at least once, if not twice, since joining the team, that the perfect player today does not take penalties. So that is something that he values, and he does not like dumb penalties. He does not like ill-timed penalties or lazy penalties. So that I'll echo that. And the one other thing, just to throw it back to you, Derek, to wrap it up. But yeah, Josh Levo has been playing some pretty good hockey, and he's a right shot too. And to put him on that line there with a right shot's a little bit of a different look. So he's played better. He has been skating. He's been around it, and they're looking to change things up a little bit. So I think it's kind of cool to, even if it's only for a period or two, we'll see. I think it's kind of cool to give Josh Levo a little bit of a reward.
Yeah, and just to wrap things up, I'm going to go in a little different direction, because I think if the Flames are going to win, say, 14 or 15 or 16 of their final 20 games, there's one key. The most important player in helping them do that is going to be the goaltender. And if you listen to Flames warm-up tonight, at the end of Daryl Sutter's conversation with Peter Laborius, kind of out of left field, he said, we need better goaltending, or something along those lines. And that's not the first time that he has said that. Jacob Markstrom, in his first 12 games, had a 233 and a 925. In his last 13 games, 336, 881. If the Flames are going to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs for a third straight season, for me, fellas, it starts right between the pipes and with your number one guy, who we know can be elite, but hasn't been since he collided with Tanner Pearson in that game against the Canucks. So for me, Jacob Markstrom is going to have to go on a bit of a heater here for the Flames to get in. We know he can do it. We'll see if he can start to do it, beginning with this game against the Jets tonight.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wills. We'll see you down here in a few hours.
All right, guys. We'll see you soon.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Their certified pre-owned spring sales event is on, with special incentives on 2017 to 2020 vehicles. Visit MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca.
We are 2 weeks from the 2021 NHL trade deadline. Our countdown today focused on goaltenders and the number one trade chip in Buffalo. Stay with us. Deadline talk next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show for the big city. Big city. More Calgary sports talk next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls, in the heart of downtown Calgary, this is Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Diversity, community, social responsibility. It's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. All sports. Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
We are closing in on trade deadline day 2021, April 12th. So how far off are we?
The NHL trade deadline is coming.
14 days.
Ooh, I think 14 days means that we are 2 weeks away from our wall-to-wall trade deadline coverage right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Let's start here, Will. How worried should the Flames be? It's not the Flames. How worried should the Maple Leafs be, rather? We'll connect it to the Flames in a second. How worried should the Maple Leafs be about their goaltending situation with the struggles of Freddie Anderson and his injury issues, and the fact that Jack Campbell has never been a one, and Sheldon Keefe revealed today that he has not been playing at 100% either? Do they go after someone, and if so, what type of options could Toronto be looking at?
I think they might entertain it. The good news for the Maple Leafs, I think, is that there are 2 weeks until the deadline. And listening to Elliot Friedman last hour, it tells me that they're not overly concerned about Freddie Anderson's long-term injury. And they believe that maybe some rest right here, right now, might do him some good. Now, 2 weeks can change. And those thoughts can certainly pivot. But I'm thinking right now the Maple Leafs are okay. There are a certain couple of spots they can look. One of them would be Carolina. The other could be here in Calgary, especially when you factor in the border. But I think if I was a betting man, Pat, I loved Elliott's line. The Maple Leafs have limited access to what they can do at the deadline, or limited ability to what they can do. If possible, I think they want to avoid using that on a goaltender.
I would be worried if I'm the Maple Leafs, even if Freddie Anderson is fine, even if he's not going to miss a good chunk of time, and he's back in a week and a half. He's been so bad this year, and he has struggled so consistently this year. And this team has got aspirations of being in the Final Four. This team has aspirations of going on a deep run. And they've been the best team in this division all year long. They have yet to win a playoff round since Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and this new core group entered the league. And this feels like, Will, their best year. It would just be, if I'm a Maple Leafs fan or if I'm Kyle Dubas, I just feel like it would be such a shame to waste all that potential and how wide open this division is, wasted because you couldn't get a save. And Freddie Anderson's the guy that has the track record of being able to play the games over and over and over again. Jack Campbell does not. We'll see if Campbell can take on a bigger workload, but I couldn't feel super confident in either of those guys going into the postseason. The problem is whether it's Mrazek or Riddick or any of the other options that are out there, James Reimer, like there's a number of different goaltending names out there. I don't know how much of an upgrade you're getting, but I also don't know how confident you can be in your goaltending going into the postseason.
Yeah, but I think also there's something to be said about Freddie Anderson playing a little bit banged up this year too, right? I'm not trying to absolve him from some of the issues he's had, but
right.
He's been banged up, and I think if you can rest him, and again, like I said, I think the cap situation is the deal breaker for me here, Pat. If I have to roll the dice with Freddie Anderson, I got to roll the dice with Freddie Anderson. Unfortunately for them, they might have to do that. And so I think, you know, they are trying to, at the same time, give confidence to Freddie Anderson. Like I said, they still got the 2 weeks. I'm with you. I think about it. I think about it a lot. But ultimately, based on the limited options I might have at the deadline, I'm not sure I want to go down the goalie route. And we haven't even talked about the X factor here. And that's the, tell me the last time a goalie trade in season has worked. That's the other part.
They don't typically have the greatest
success. So I'm not doing
it. You're right.
If I'm
there. Yeah. I mean, Robin Lehner worked pretty well for Vegas last year.
Sure.
So I'll give
Absolutely.
That one. Granted, there was like a, do you remember there was like a week or two pause in the season last year before they resumed? That has to be taken into account when taking a look at Lehner. I don't know if Robin Lehner works out exactly the same way if there isn't a 4 month COVID pause and we don't.
And
get
keep
the
in mind,
Cup
before that pause,
September.
He played three games, right?
So. Exactly. That's why I'm saying we have no idea what would have happened. I absolutely think that you have to factor that in. You're right. I remember Ryan Miller and the price that St. Louis paid. To
Everyone
get
thought they had
Buffalo.
It done, right?
Ugh, and he was awful. And they gave up everything for him, and he was awful and never played another game in St. Louis after that post-deadline run. So, no, it's absolutely a risk. It's funny. So let's transition that because I'm absolutely with you. Like, that's a factor. Toronto's
By the way,
situation
just apparently St. Louis didn't learn their lesson because didn't they do it with Brodeur after that too?
Yeah, although Brodeur, I think that was – after, but Brodeur didn't come in to like be their number one. They went out and got Miller to like be their guy, and it was an unmitigated disaster for him. Just awful. So I think David Riddick is a guy they're getting calls on. I believe that they have had conversations about it. Like, I'm not saying that they have said, hey, let's talk about trading David Riddick, but I would imagine they've answered phone calls because I would imagine there's a team or two around the league interested in him. I think Toronto would be an interesting landing spot if the Flames were willing to trade David Riddick. I think Washington would be an interesting option. I've thought a lot about Colorado. I don't think Riddick is necessarily going to go in somewhere and upgrade 100% on another option. I like him. I still think there's something there. And when he's on, he can be a really good goaltender. But as we know, consistency and longevity are the two things that he's battled with the most in his NHL career. But like, just from a Toronto standpoint, if you're looking for a little bit more, I don't know what even the right word, if you're just looking to solidify that position a little bit more, even if Anderson is back in a week, I could see why they would want to do that, just to give themselves another option, another guy with some NHL and some decent NHL experience. I think that Riddick would get interest. I just don't know what that asking price ends up looking like. And we talked a little bit about this last week, but I find it almost impossible. Like, somebody asked me on overtime on Saturday, could Riddick get a second? I'm like, yeah, sure, maybe. Like, maybe Riddick could get a second, or maybe he could only get you a fourth or a fifth. Like, I honestly have no clue where to ballpark that value.
Yeah, it's a hard one to ballpark. He's also not a super cheap backup goaltender, so I think you've got to factor that in as well when you consider two-thirds of the league are up against it. And just on the Toronto-specific situation, Pat, I'll flip it back on you a little bit. I mean, is he much of an upgrade on Jack Campbell? Because if you tell me that one guy's played more than the other, well, I don't know if
I
believe that is true.
Is.
And
that's
and
what
the playoffs,
I said.
They would have the same amount of experience. So I would say that I don't know if it's a huge upgrade on Jack Campbell. So I don't know if that makes a ton of sense for Toronto. The only thing that you could throw in there was the success he had against them this season to maybe raise the eyebrows of Kyle Dubas. But I would be hard to be – it'd be hard to convince me that David Riddick is a massive upgrade on Jack Campbell.
No, I don't think he's an upgrade on most of the places that we're talking about. I think you're just bringing him in to maybe solidify things a little bit.
Which is why I think it'd be hard to get a second. I think we're talking fifth or sixth round pick, probably. Fourth or fifth, maybe.
$2.75 million is the cap hit. Teams will be able to bring that in a little easier once we get to the deadline. But still, it's tough to ballpark what that actual value is for David Riddick. So we'll see. Toronto is definitely one of those teams that could be in the goaltending market. A few others could be in the goaltending market. Hell, I mean, maybe Philadelphia enters the goaltending market just to maybe solidify things for them down the stretch, because once again, that has been an unmitigated disaster at that position this year. We all know who their goalie of the future is, however. Let's transition to Buffalo. The fire sale, or the presumed fire sale, began a few days ago when Eric Staal was dealt from Buffalo to Montreal. The Sabres got a third and a fifth. Does Taylor Hall get them a first-round pick? Like, do you think once we get to Monday, Elliot talked about a little earlier about how he thinks maybe the Sabres might be waiting to get that cap number on Hall down as much as humanly possible. When we get to right around April 12th, can you see a team giving up a first for Taylor Hall?
No, I cannot. This maybe will be a weird year in terms of a year where guys are maybe, or GMs or front offices are more willing to give up that first round pick. But I if you're given a first round pick for Taylor Hall, all the power to you. I certainly would not be even thinking about that at this point.
I wouldn't do it. I think somebody will do it. I think when it's all said and done, they'll get something like that. Like, it'll be a 25 to 30, probably in that range, because I think it'll be one of those teams that would end up doing it. I think that Buffalo is going to have to help out significantly, like maybe to the tune of $4 million, the max they'll be able to do. I think they're going to have to help out significantly with that salary. But I do think the high end, the upside of Taylor Hall will be enough for a pretty good team to give that up and to bring them in. Like,
yeah, I believe you. I just say all the power to him. I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't do it. Like, if I'm a GM of most teams, I probably wouldn't do it, because Hall has been such a it just hasn't worked in Buffalo, and it really hasn't worked for him to the same tune pretty much ever since he won that Hart Trophy. And he deserved that Hart Trophy, and he had a hell of a year, and the high-end upside for Hall is very, very high. But, man, it would be – I would have to have the most glaring hole, and I would also need to be the type of team that believes that they're one player away from being a true Stanley Cup contender, or that player pushing me over the hump to winning a Stanley Cup. There's not a lot of places like that, but I think there will be teams desperate enough to give up what the Sabres eventually want. Do the Sabres move on from Reinhardt between now and the trade deadline?
No.
I don't know.
No,
if I
don't
would
think they do. I think that's a really, really difficult trade to make in season. I think they entertain it in the summer, but in season, I would say no.
Like, what are they – like, is Buffalo going to completely tear it down and go with a bunch of no-names next year? Like, is that really what they're going to do? Because if that's the case, you move Eichel, you move Reinhardt, you move Ristolainen, you move Montour. If that's actually what Kevin Adams is going to do, then it's going to be a painful number of years in Buffalo after a painful decade for Sabres fans. But it sure does feel like that's the direction they're going, because if Eichel doesn't want to be there, and Elliot talked about how it sounds like Reinhardt does want to be there and truly appreciates being a Sabre, and they're the team that drafted him, all that type of stuff, like, those would be the guys you'd want to build around going forward. But if they're moving them, that sure does sound like a full-on tear-it-to-the-ground absolute rebuild in Buffalo. We still don't know exactly what our trade deadline plans are 2 weeks from today, but you can bet that we will be wall-to-wall when it comes to our trade deadline coverage Monday, April 12th. Do the Flames do anything between now and then? Do the Flames do anything on deadline day? We'll be all over it for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We are moving closer to, at its regular time on the sporting calendar, the 2021 Masters, and you've got an opportunity to win some money and get in on our Masters pool. So we've teamed up with our friends at Calgary Lock and Safe, and the winner of our Masters pool this year is going to win a brand new black U-Scan Designer Series safe from Calgary Lock and Safe. And here's the kicker: you got $500 locked inside as well. Go to sportsnet.ca/960, sign up, and see if you can win our grand prize, our Masters pool, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe, who have dozens of safes in their showroom to keep your winnings locked up. Secure anything that's valuable, dangerous, or secret. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com for more details. You're locked on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.